Hello and welcome to episode 31 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I'm one of the co-founders here at ETR. And as always, of course, I'm joined by fellow co-founder, the legend himself. It is, of course, Evan Silva. Evan, what's going on?
What's up, man? Really nice ROI week, I think, for most people that played this week in Daily Fantasy. Andrew Wiggins, of course, with an absolute monster win on FanDuel. So big shouts to him. And then the same week that everyone requested that he become a staple member of the Friday Kama Sutra show, Andrew Wiggins has by far his best week of the season. So congrats to him and congrats to the people. Great call by the people.
Yeah. And there's a direct correlation between appearing on the Friday show and winning, you know, mid six figures. It's just, there's direct correlation. I wish that I wish that would correlate for me in the same way. Yeah. Excited. Wiggins will be back on Friday. Also, if you want to hear Wiggins talk about his lineups and his thought process, we turned the lineup review for this week free. So you can find that on establishtherun.com. Hear him talk about how he got to his lineups and stuff like that. Okay, this episode, Evan, episode 31, we're going to cover the AFC. It will be free. Episode 32, of course, we'll cover the NFC. It will be behind the paywall. So let's get right to it with the AFC. And man, what a win for the Baltimore Ravens. Not a surprise. I think we talked about it last week, how we thought, we both thought the Ravens had a really, really good chance to win the game. And I think a lot of sharp people did. I mean, the Ravens just did what they do. One thing that I noted was that with all their cornerbacks healthy now, I mean, they have a serious secondary right now. I think this defense can be really, really good again. And then on a negative note that I saw, Mark Andrews' routes run rate was really low. I'm not sure if that was because of the game flow or something that they did because they were playing the Patriots, et cetera, et cetera. But just something to keep an eye on there with Mark Andrews. But obviously, great win. What did you see out of the Ravens?
Yeah, that was probably the most notable takeaway that I had. Of course, Lamar Jackson did his thing. He's been a stud in fantasy every single week, and I expect that to continue, obviously, in Week 10 against Cincinnati, who he already shredded for 388 total yards when these teams met in Week 6. But yeah, that was the biggest takeaway. I think regarding Mark Andrews, I think that it had to do with, number one, the Ravens took a decidedly run-heavy approach against New England, which over its previous five games was allowing 5.1 yards per carry. So that has become the hole to pick in the Patriots defense. And also because the Ravens got out to an early lead, that translated to Nick Boyle playing his most snaps this season. He played 84% of the snaps and saw five targets, scored a short TD. But Mark Andrews was down at 14 routes run, 34% of the snaps. I think that Mark Andrews will bounce back against Cincinnati. But Mark Andrews' snaps were, or his routes run were also down in the game previous to the Ravens' Week 8 bye at 18 routes. You want to see him up in that 25 to 35 range. So that's something to keep an eye on. But when these teams played in Week 6, Mark Andrews had 6 for 99. I'm going to be sticking with him. But he definitely, like, his floor feels like it's gotten a little bit lower recently. I mean, they could play with three tight ends. They've got Hayden Hurst as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's move to the Buffalo Bills. I think one of the bigger fantasy storylines over the last couple weeks has been the emergence of Devin Singletary. And I hope that some people got on Devin Singletary in Week 9. We talked about it a bunch, how in Week 8, he outsnapped Frank Gore 40-17. And then people were like, oh, well, maybe that was because they were trailing against the Eagles. And so Devin Singletary was out there more than Frank Gore. But in Week 9 against the Redskins, they were winning for most of the game, for all of the game. And Devin Singletary was again the feature back. Over the last 2 weeks, Devin Singletary has outsnapped Frank Gore 81-38. And no other running backs have even played a snap. Now he gets Cleveland. Then he gets Miami after this. It feels like it's time to be excited about Singletary. Actually, it feels like it's past time. It's too late to be excited about Devin Singletary. I assume that he's going to be popular this week against Cleveland. Do you see this kind of split sustaining now that we have a 2-week sample on it?
I think so. And, you know, just as importantly as the snaps disparity is, that Devin Singletary has just completely taken over passing game work, because Frank Gore has run 5 and 5 pass routes in consecutive games. So Devin Singletary is just dominating the passing game work. In the receiving game, there continues to be only two guys at the top, John Brown and Cole Beasley. Cole Beasley's now scored a touchdown in three straight games. Duke Williams was out last week. We were hopeful that Robert Foster might jump into that role. He did not. He played behind – Isaiah McKenzie was the clear-cut third receiver behind John Brown and Cole Beasley. And then Andre Roberts even played more than Robert Foster. So, I don't know. The coaching staff seems like it's down on Robert Foster. He's just going to be a lightly used reserve.
Robert Foster would need a John Brown injury to happen. He doesn't really benefit from anybody else being out. And yeah, the Cole Beasley thing is so absurd because I've been critical of Cole Beasley. For them to like use him as a red zone player is just it's comical. But yeah, he's just been so bad outside of scoring those touchdowns. Let's move to the Bengals, and they've made the change, Evan. You've been calling it for it for a long time. I'm not sure if you were calling for Ryan Finley necessarily, but they have made the change. Ryan Finley will start, and I assume he'll start for the rest of the season. Ryan Finley, I watched a lot in the preseason because I played him a bunch, and he was extremely productive. Really played well, I thought, but he hit 73% of his passes, threw three touchdowns, but absurdly low ADOT, like was just checking down and really throwing short. I'm not sure that's going to fly in the regular season, and I'm not sure that's going to fly against the Ravens. So I have some concerns for Ryan Finley here. One positive for Ryan Finley is AJ Green is expected back. And man, you don't know how Andy Dalton would have played with AJ Green this year. It probably would have been better. I actually don't think Andy Dalton was close to the biggest problem that the Bengals had this year. Obviously, he doesn't help, but they had much bigger problems than Andy Dalton. But anyways, how do you see Ryan Finley faring? And why don't you give the people some background on Ryan Finley?
Yeah, I didn't think that Andy Dalton played poorly really at all relative to expectations, relative to the offensive line, his supporting cast. Not only is AJ Green due back, but Tyler Eifert all of a sudden became a huge part of the Bengals offense right before their week 9 bye. I think that it might have been due to the Bengals trying to showcase him right before the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if they get it, the full AJ Green, they've got Tyler Boyd in the slot, they've got Auden Tate and Alex Erickson as alternative weapons, and Tyler Eifert, all of a sudden their supporting cast looks kind of decent on paper and might be able to float Ryan Finley as like an every week starter in two quarterback leagues. Their offensive line, of course, still a significant issue. But Ryan Finley, I think that the Bengals saw, and the Bengals are of course coached by Zach Taylor, a former Rams assistant. I think that they saw a lot of Jared Goff in Ryan Finley. They're kind of built the same. They're kind of tall, kind of gangly. They're fairly accurate, as you saw in the preseason with that 73% completion rate. And I think he's going to be able to get completions. I'm not sure that he's going to be able to consistently get the ball downfield to Auden Tate and or AJ Green. AJ Green can, a healthy AJ Green can really win in all areas of the field. But I'm not sure that there's going to be a huge, huge downgrade here like we saw when Andy Dalton went out last year and they had to turn to Jeff Driscoll. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, obviously not a home run spot, playing the Ravens. One argument you can make is that the Ravens coming off the New England win, maybe they come in a little bit hungover, but we'll see. The Cleveland Browns, I mean, what a mess. I mean, go out to Denver and just never really threatened to beat Brandon Allen, and some of the tackling and some of the post-game stuff. I mean, just really embarrassing stuff for Cleveland. They're not going to free Todd Monken. Obviously, they're just going to go spiraling down into dust. One note I have is that Kareem Hunt is due back this week, and they were playing Dontrell Hilliard a decent amount, 38% of the snaps over the last 2 weeks for Dontrell Hilliard. I could see Kareem Hunt just stepping right into that Dontrell Hilliard role and leaving Nick Chubb's role where it's at. Maybe Kareem Hunt gets a few more touches than Hilliard were getting, but I still think Nick Chubb's role is fairly secure. Problem is this week they have to play the Bills, and the Bills have one of the best defenses, I think, and I'd be surprised if this was kind of a breakout spot for the Browns. What do you think about Kareem Hunt and the state of the Cleveland Browns right now?
I think that that's an excellent breakdown of how it's probably going to go, with snaps being 65-35 in favor of Nick Chubb, but touches being decidedly in favor of Nick Chubb, and Kareem Hunt being more of, playing that Dontrell Hilliard role, just being a plug-and-play upgrade in place of Dontrell Hilliard. One note on the Browns is that this is just so far from a Todd Monken offense. First of all, Todd Monken is not calling plays. He's just sitting up in the booth, probably being like, what are we doing here? But this Baker Mayfield last year was number 6 in the NFL in percentage of 20-plus yard throws downfield. He was number 4 in the NFL in the second half of the season in 20-plus yard attempts downfield. This year, he is 18th. So this is just the anti-Todd Monken offense. Todd Monken comes from the air raid. They threw the ball downfield like crazy last year. Completely discombobulated offense. It's painful to watch. They even added Odell Beckham, and they're throwing the football downfield less. Mm-hmm. It's really sad, is what it is.
Yeah, I felt fortunate. I played Jarvis Landry on DraftKings this past week. I felt fortunate to get out of there with 17 points from Jarvis Landry, which was actually a really good day for his price. But yeah, the Odell stuff, you know, says that his groin still is bothering him, and et cetera, et cetera. And it's just a total mess in Cleveland. All right, let's move to the Denver Broncos, and your boy small-handed one, Brandon Allen, did get a win. I'm not sure that we can credit Brandon Allen necessarily for the win. Only had 20 pass attempts, and the big play was the Noah Fant 75-yard run, catch and run, which is like the worst tackling I've ever seen. I've seen some people be like, this was Noah Fant's big breakout. He's going to break out now, you know? His usage was about the same as it's been all year. He just happened to catch a 75-yard catch and run that was just absolutely ridiculous. But we'll see what the Broncos do on their bye. We'll see if Drew Locke gets back in there. We'll see if they stick with Brandon Allen. What did you see out of the Broncos?
Yeah, 12 big completions, which is pretty impressive for a guy who has to throw the ball with two hands. Brandon Allen played. I mean, he played as well as he possibly could. Didn't give the ball to the other team, you know. Yeah, credit to him. I actually played him in Scott Fishbowl, just completely desperate. Played him in Scott Fishbowl. He goes out there, averages 9.7 yards for pass attempt, of course, a ton of it on rack. He goes, throws two touchdown passes, runs for 13 yards. Awesome game in relief. His first ever NFL start. He's been around for several years. I don't know, you know, the Broncos have been really soured, especially Vic Fangio has been sour on Drew Locke like from the get-go. So I don't think it's necessarily guaranteed that even if Drew Locke is healthy, he's opened the season on IR return. I don't know if it's even a guarantee that they go back to him, especially after Brandon Allen got the win. Royce Freeman entered this past week with a dinged shoulder. It wasn't made a big deal out of. But I do wonder if that contributed to him only getting six touches. But the Broncos really only had the ball for like 40 offensive plays. So that was the big thing, why Philip Lindsay only got 9 carries and 0 targets, and Royce Freeman only had 6 touches. They made the most of their opportunity. Philip Lindsay, Noah Fant, and Cortland Sutton did. Cortland Sutton mossed Denzel Ward for a touchdown, saw 8 targets from Brandon Allen.
Let's go to the Houston Texans. They are also going on a bye. I mean, Deshaun Watson is ridiculous. I mean, putting the team on his back for sure. I would note that their schedule coming up after the bye is pretty absurd. I mean, they play at Baltimore. Then they play a huge game against the Colts, which will go a long way towards deciding the AFC South. I think then they play the Patriots. So, you know, certainly no picnics coming up. But yeah, I mean, Deshaun is straight balling. And the other note that I had was just the way they're using DeAndre Hopkins just doesn't feel right to me. It just feels weird. Like his ADOT is so much lower than it's been in recent years. Anything on Houston as they go into their bye?
Yeah, that's definitely true. And that's why we've seen Kenny Stills really as the deep guy not be that productive, especially over the past two games. Their vertical passing offense just really hasn't been there for the most part this year. And so that kind of, you know, shows how great Deshaun Watson really has been, because they're missing this significant element. I mean, Deshaun Watson, one of the best downfield passers last year, and you know, during his short time as a rookie, Darren Fells scored another touchdown, saw 3 targets, only had the one catch for the 1 yard TD, but he's been a consistent presence in the red zone, and I think he's an every week starter coming out of the bye at a really bad fantasy position. Tight end, I think he's probably toward the bottom of the top 12, but I think he's in the top 12 just playing with Deshaun Watson. We'll have to see about Will Fuller. It hasn't seemed like he's been particularly close to returning. Duke Johnson has been getting a little bit more usage recently. He actually led the Texans in receiving against the Jags and also scored a goal line touchdown.
Let's go to the Indianapolis Colts. And, you know, normally I would just kind of brush off some of these injuries and situations in the Colts, but they do play Miami this week. So I want to talk about it. And I also want to talk about it because I think Zach Pascal is probably going to be a big waiver decision for people this week. Jacoby Brissett's MCL sprain does not sound serious. Sounds like Jacoby Brissett actually has a chance to play this week against the Dolphins. Paris Campbell, on the other hand, looks like he's going to be out. But regardless, Zach Pascal, I mean, he's playing almost every snap, and it seems like he's their number one wideout. Don't expect T.Y. Hilton back this week. How interested are you in Pascal for this week against the Dolphins, and how interested are you in him, just generally speaking, as an ad for our season-long friends?
Very, very interested in him. He has, I mean, he graduated to being a full-time player in week 8, which we discussed. He actually had that over 100-yard game in week 7, and that was still when he was playing like below half of the snaps. All of a sudden, he moves up to like 94% of the snaps in week 8 as a slow game. So you're kind of like, you know, what's going on here? But he was, again, a full-time player in week 9, and everything kind of came together for him. Was productive regardless of which quarterback has been in there. I mean, Jacoby Brissett, even when Zach Pascal wasn't playing very much, he was still targeting Zach Pascal at a high rate. And then Zach Pascal comes in and produces with Brian Hoyer as well. This past week, he ran 37 routes. Next closest among Colts receivers was Chester Rogers at 27. Chester Rogers did kind of pay off as a super cheap dart, only had 3 catches for 22 yards, but he did score a touchdown, saw 5 targets. He's going to be the number 2 receiver going forward. And then Deion Kane and Ashton Doolin are going to round out the 3 and 4 receiver sets until T.Y. Hilton and Paris Campbell come back.
Yeah. And Devin Funchess. And
Devin Funchess, who I believe is due back in week 11.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's your receiver core makeup. What do you think about the tight ends? Jack Doyle came through with a short touchdown last week.
Yeah. You know, I thought it was close on DraftKings on some of these punt tight ends like Doyle and like Greg Olsen and like Cam Brate, who ended up only playing 11 snaps due to his rib injury. But yeah, I mean, I thought that it would come down to who scored the touchdown, and Doyle got the touchdown. So, you know. It's nothing to be excited about, I don't think, but they are going to be red zone presences, and the Colts clearly have a tendency to throw the ball to tight ends in the red zone. The Jacksonville Jaguars, Evan, made a big news on Tuesday when they decided that Minshew Mania is over. They're going back to Big Dick Nick. They're going back to Nick Foles. Do you agree with the decision, and how do you think the offense changes with Foles, for better or for worse? They are going on their bye this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Minshew had a chance to wrap it up in that game against the Texans, and he just really just flunked that test. I mean, and that was a game where the Texans were missing, you know, half of their starting secondary. J.J. Watt, you know, had not played well on defense, really, even with those guys in there, and Minshew just missed everything in that game. He had, like, three fourth quarter turnovers, maybe even 4. I mean, the game got out of control in the second half, and Minshew was not accurate, just looked like he was nervous and uncomfortable, and that became the turning point. I think that if Minshew would have played to his to expectations in that game, we definitely would have seen Minshew in there. But yeah, I mean, it's time to give Nick Foles. This is not a bad team. This is not a bad team at all. They can rush the passer. They've got a good running game. They've got some explosiveness in the passing game, and they're going to see what Nick Foles gives them. I think it's deserved.
The Kansas City Chiefs have some notable things going on. Patrick Mahomes might be back. We're not sure yet. But Damian Williams, I mean, you know, I don't think that LeSean McCoy was benched for fumbling in week 8, but he only played 6 snaps in week 9. Damian Williams gets the hot hand. He goes for 73% of the snaps. It's really hard to project on a week-to-week basis. I think for now that it looks like Damian is going to have a chance to run with this a little bit, but I don't want to say that for sure because I really don't know. Do you have any read on what's going on with the Chiefs' backfield?
I mean, my assumption was that LeSean McCoy was kind of disciplined for fumbling. He actually had lost 2 fumbles within the previous 4 games, just carrying the ball like a loaf of bread out
but
there.
But he's been doing that his whole career for Andy Reid, you know. So all of a sudden he's gonna punish him for carrying the ball like a loaf of bread.
Well, when the results are like lost fumbles, I think that Andy Reid's probably like, hey, you know, if you're going to do that, you better not fumble. Right. And then he starts fumbling and he's like, well, you know, now we're going to give the ball to Damian Williams. Although Damian Williams wasn't that great against Minnesota beyond the 91-yard run. you know, he really didn't do anything special beyond that. I think we kind of anticipated this as soon as the Chiefs signed LeSean McCoy, that it was going to be a roller coaster in this backfield. And I don't think that that's going to change anytime soon. These guys are like, you know, we can't really use them in DFS. And then in season long leagues, they're like risky flex plays.
The Los Angeles Chargers in their first game without Ken Wisenhunt, I mean, got a really good win. I understand that they were home and Aaron Rodgers was really bad, but credit to the Chargers defense and the offense was reasonable as well. I mean, Melvin Gordon got 20 carries, but Austin Eckler still got 12, and they even mixed in Justin Jackson for 2 carries. You know, 1 week after running 43 plays, they ran 68 plays, which is back around what should be normal for them, which obviously makes a big difference. I will say that, you know, Keenan Allen's performance was, I think, somewhat concerning because I don't think he's hurt at all anymore, but the matchup certainly gets much easier. They play the Thursday night game this week against the Raiders, which have turned into probably the biggest pass funnel, or one of the biggest pass funnels, along with Tampa and a couple other defenses, the Eagles, that we've seen. Did you notice any changes in the post-Ken Wisenhunt era, and what did you think of the Chargers?
I mean, I think that it looked like Melvin Gordon is finally, you know, took like 5 games and a bunch of losses, but it looks like Melvin Gordon is finally in football shape after his extended holdout. Season highs in carries, touches, snaps against the Packers, and he has been, he's already top 10 in the NFL in carries inside the 10-yard line, even though he's only played in 5 games. So Melvin Gordon, I think, that was like a vintage Melvin Gordon game. That's what you expect from Melvin Gordon at his full usage. And I think we'll continue to get that until, you know, unless he really starts to struggle or puts the ball on the ground or whatever. Austin Eckler also used in promising fashion, 16 touches. He's got 80 plus total yards and or a touchdown in 8 of 9 games this year. Just all the guys have been kind of up and down, except for really Hunter Henry. They've got a lot of weapons, man. They've got Keenan Allen. They've got Mike Williams, who finally popped up for his first 100-plus yard game of the season, still has not scored a touchdown on the year. And then they've got Eckler and Melvin Gordon. So, you know, the ball has to go to a lot of places for these guys to be consistent. But I do think that this is going to be a bounce-back week on Thursday night for Keenan Allen.
The Miami Dolphins have a couple of things going on, man. Pour one out for our boy Preston Williams. I mean, if you follow the offseason, you know, kind of the OTA news and training camp news and preseason, I mean, Preston Williams was someone that you had to be excited about. Undrafted free agent, you know, wins the job on his merits and becomes a productive NFL starter and was in the midst of a breakout game and really won a lot of people a lot of money this past weekend. He was extremely cheap on DraftKings, $4,200. And then he blows out his knee. So hate to see it for Preston Williams. I think that this helps Devontae Parker in some sense, who's been playing reasonably as well. And then we also get news that Mark Walton has been suspended for 4 games. This, I think, people probably overreact to. Like, I don't really want anything to do with Kalen Ballage or Patrick Laird or Miles Gaskin. I just don't think there's enough upside nor talent in those guys. And the scheme is not good enough for them to succeed. But yeah, a couple things going on with Miami. What do you think?
Yeah, and the beat writers are saying that they're definitely going to add a back. We'll see who that is. At receiver, you know, it was really only Devontae Parker and Preston Williams were playing a whole lot. And then it was like a little bit of Allen Hurns, a little bit of Albert Wilson. And I think that the biggest bump probably go to Devontae Parker, directly to Devontae Parker, and then to potentially Mike Gesicki, who has started to really come around. He's coming off the best game of his career. We've always known that he's been really athletic. And if Ryan Fitzpatrick starts to, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is really aggressive. And if Ryan Fitzpatrick starts to lock on to Mike Gesicki, we could start to get some big games out of him. He had 95 yards in week 9.
Yeah. Shout out to Penn State. He's part of my all Penn State team that I like to play. The New England Patriots,
That still has no quarterback.
No, we play it without a quarterback. The New England Patriots, obviously, you know, people are going to overreact to them losing. I still think they're one of the best teams in the league, undoubtedly. From a fantasy perspective, one thing I noticed was Mohamed Sanu playing 100% of the snaps, Mohamed Sanu being really, really involved. They're going on their bye. I don't know if there's a lot to say. What did you see out of the Patriots' first loss of the season?
Yeah, not a ton to say. You do like to see that that big time usage for Mohamed Sanu, 14 targets against Baltimore, and he was really the guy that the Ravens kind of let beat down to some extent. I mean, they had Marlon Humphrey was in the slot against Julian Edelman, as we kind of predicted, and then Jimmy Smith outside, and you know this Patriots passing game, I think, is going to continue to be kind of a difficult one to predict on a week-to-week basis. Philip Dorsett was the guy who took a back seat this past week, of course, because the Patriots fell behind. Sony Michel was a total bust. James White balled out. I mean, he had some incredible catches in that game, wound up with about 90 total yards and a touchdown. He's always going to be the guy that steps up when they fall behind, and he wound up having a pretty big game. Ben Watson has become an integral part of their offense, not really making a ton of fantasy noise yet, but he's out there a ton. He had 5 targets against the Ravens. It's really not that great of an offense. In New England right now, they're going to have to figure out some stuff during the bye.
A lot going on with the Jets right now. As we're recording this Tuesday, 3 o'clock Eastern, I'm not sure on Le'Veon Bell's status because he went for an MRI on his knee, which I think he's done a couple times before. And so I was already on alert. And then they signed Josh Adams off the practice squad onto the active roster. So I was like, oh, well, Lev might be done. It seems like he's hurt. But then Schefter is reporting that they were just protecting other teams from snatching up Josh Adams off the practice squad, and Lev is actually okay. So we'll see on that. I also have people tweeting at me that Ty Montgomery also banged up his knee, and I was looking for stuff, and I couldn't find it. Ryan Reynolds, who works with us, found somebody saying that Ty Montgomery may have banged up his knee trying to block a punt in this past game. So we'll see how that all shakes out. I think Ty Montgomery, if healthy, is ahead of Bilal Powell, but I wouldn't swear to it. And then also, Evan, I mean, God, Sam Darnold, I thought this was the spot where Sam Darnold would get right, where Sam Darnold and Robbie Anderson would go completely ham. And Sam Darnold failing against Miami was concerning. What do you have on the Jets?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, he continues to get, like, the pass protection is bad. Giving up 3 sacks and 9 hits to the Dolphins, that is not good. But Sam Darnold obviously himself has not played particularly well. I didn't think that this was, you know, as bad of a game as the previous two, but he did make some bonehead errors. His interception was a really bad decision, really, really bad decision deep in the red zone. And then he also, lost a fumble that went into the back of the end zone and didn't hustle after it. And you could see, his offensive lineman barking at him about it. I think that the confidence level is low for him right now. And, I mean, it should be. He's not playing well. Very few guys around him are playing well. Outside of the one big play to Robbie Anderson in, what was it, week 5 or whatever against the Cowboys, I mean, they have generated so few big plays as a unit. Jamison Crowder did have a big PPR game against Miami. And Ryan Griffin has started to become a bigger part of the offense. But I think we'll see Chris Herndon in week 10. He was active on Sunday, but I don't think he got in there for a single snap.
Right. The Oakland Raiders are continuing to play good ball. I mean, they got a good win at home against the Lions. And Josh Jacobs, from just a strict rushing perspective, I mean, there's few guys in the NFL I'd probably rather have as just a strict rusher. I'm talking about for fantasy. The problem for me is that Josh Jacobs caught 0 passes, only had 2 targets. And, you know, Matt Waldman has called Jalen Richard James White West. And we see Jalen Richard in there in the 2-minute drill, in the 4-minute drill. And I think that hurts Josh Jacobs' fantasy from a fantasy perspective. But I mean, God, I mean, Josh Jacobs can rip off 100 yards, a couple of touchdowns like we saw, like it's no problem. The other note that I had on this team was Darren Waller, only 4 catches the last 2 weeks. I know people are worried. I think Darren Waller is going to be fine. His usage was a little worse this past game, only 55 out of 70 snaps, whereas before he was playing 100% of the snaps. But Darren Waller, from a talent and scheme and usage perspective, still remains one of the best tight ends, in my opinion. I wouldn't freak out too much. What do you see on the Raiders?
Yeah, I think it's been a defensive scheming thing against against Darren Waller for sure. The Texans noticeably devoted a lot of coverage to him the week before and this past week. You know, Matt Patricia, like we've seen him really sell out to stop opposing top weapons, kind of a strategy that he learned from Bill Belichick. We saw him take out Zach Ertz earlier in the season. Darren Waller still made the most of his two targets caught, both for 52 yards. Hunter Renfrow has come on as a really big part of the passing game. Not a fun player to play, and I don't think that I personally am going to play him. But he's got 17 targets over the past 2 weeks, and stat lines of 488.1 and 654.1. So him stepping up, I think, is just going to help other guys. Tyrell Williams didn't have a big fantasy game against the Lions, but he has made his share of big plays. Jalen Richard, I'm glad that you mentioned him because he's a really good player. There was one drive in particular in the second half where he got touches on four straight plays. I mean, he just ripped off chunk gains on all four of them. I think that he's an excellent handcuff. They do have DeAndre Washington still there, but as a guy with some upside that you could put on your bench, hey, if something happens to Josh Jacobs and this dude's running into 20 car crashes a game, Jalen Richard, I think, could be like a sleeper down the stretch if something happens to Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, and there's a lot of guys like that in our waiver wire column this week. And last week, too, we highlighted guys we think that you should have an eye on for preparing for the fantasy playoffs. And there's tons of stashes like Rykel Armstead and Alexander Mattison and Jordan Wilkins. And there's just a ton of them that should at least be on radars as you kind of get through the bye weeks in season long. Let's go to the Steelers. Jalen Samuels, I was surprised that Trey Edmonds got 12 carries. And that was, I think, disappointing for Jalen Samuels. But as we talked about, Jalen Samuels, I mean, pass catching is just outrageous. Like, he's averaging a catch on 14% of his snaps now in his career, which is an absolutely massive number. And I don't think he's going to get 13 targets again. That's obviously ridiculous. But Jalen Samuels is a really good bet for 4 to 7 targets anytime James Conner sits. Sounds like there's some optimism on James Conner's shoulder ahead of this week. But we'll see. What do you see out of the Steelers?
Yeah, and Schefter had a report before Sunday's game that James Conner, kind of made it seem like James Conner was likely to miss one more week. Mm-hmm. But that's still a long way off, and players can heal. So we'll just have to see. But, yeah, Jalen Samuels just – this now is his fourth game in the NFL where he's had 7 or more receptions. Juju had a slow game. It's just a passing game in its entirety. Had a slow game. The Steelers didn't really win this game with their offense. James Washington did make a couple of big plays, like the first big plays he's ever made in the NFL, really in like a regular season game. Mm-hmm. So that was nice to see. I don't know if that's something that you can necessarily bank on. Vance McDonald popped up for a pretty good game. That's a reminder that using tight ends against the Colts tends to be a pretty good strategy. That's about all I got on the Steelers.
Yeah, certainly concerns for, I know people are excited about Deontay Johnson, and we had major hesitance on Deontay Johnson, not only for the scheme that the Colts play, but just a lack of trust in Mason Rudolph being able to get him the ball down the field anyways. All right, last AFC team was the Tennessee Titans. They're home against the Chiefs this week, which is certainly an interesting matchup. Do expect Delanie Walker back. Another lost fumble for Deion Lewis. Derrick Henry was looking really dusty in the first half, then came on. Derrick Henry didn't have a big second half, despite the fact that the Titans were losing. What do you think about the Titans going into this game against the Chiefs?
Well, they should be able to run the ball on the Chiefs. Well, the Chiefs do deserve credit for kind of shutting down the Vikings running game this past week, but I think that the Titans should be able to run the ball on them. Yeah, Derrick Henry had 2 touches in the first half. And Deion Lewis, who had not had more than 4 touches in any game since week 1, all of a sudden had 9. It was like the Titans kind of overthought their process in week 9. But I think that they'll probably try to get the ball going back. Derrick Henry on screen plays, man. Why don't they just dial up at least 2 screen calls for Derrick Henry every single game? This guy scores a touchdown every time they throw him a screen pass because no one wants to tackle him out in space. He is an absolute Mack truck out there. And I think that would really help their offense. The passing game contributors all just they're just always really difficult to trust. I mean, Ryan Tannehill actually played really badly in this game, but he finished with a good fantasy game because he rushed for a touchdown. He threw for 330 yards. He had a bunch of turnovers, but he actually wound up being good in fantasy. I don't know. I mean, this Week 10 game is going to be interesting because so much is going to depend upon whether Patrick Mahomes plays. Anytime that Patrick Mahomes plays, the box score expectation elevates for the players on the other side.
All right. That is going to do it for this AFC Team by Team podcast. Appreciate you all listening, and head over to establishtherun.com. See everything that we have to offer. For producer Luke, for Evan, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.